Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. I like to read. I just finished the first book in the Last Policeman series by Ben Winters. But I also like reading what you folks post on soundcheck.org every day. For example, here's a comment from Omar in Miami, writing about tonight's band, The Revivalists. They're a neat rock outfit from New Orleans, and Omar writes, "One of my favorite bands of the last few years. See you in New Orleans for my birthday." Now, if Omar is ready to celebrate his birthday with The Revivalists, maybe you should spend some time with them too. They'll perform in our studio later. Also, we've been doing this series all week called How to Be Smarter About, and we've been asking for your suggestions of what you want to be smarter about. Here's one idea from Laura in Virginia. She writes, "Music production and sound engineering, how it's done, how it can shape or change a song or album, and how it has changed over time with new technologies." Wow, where do we start? It's a good idea, Laura, but we may have to mull that one over a bit first. Also, Jim B. from Queens suggests this. "How to find my next favorite song. I used to be good at this, but need help now." Well, Jim, you're already doing one thing, right? You're visiting soundcheck.org. But still, that's a great idea for our series. How do you become smarter about where to look for your next favorite song? Personally, I like SoundCloud and eMusic.com, but there are many other possible answers, so we'll get back to you on that one, Jim. Right now, though, it is time for tonight's installment in the series.
I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
Damn it, you have to be smarter than that.
Pretty smart, huh?
Pretty smart.
All this week, we've been helping people get smarter about their musical blind spots, and we've been asking you, our listeners, to tell us about the things that you want to be smarter about, and we've heard from a lot of you, including this comment at soundcheck.org from Darren in Paramus, New Jersey. Darren wrote, "Astral Weeks is Van Morrison's greatly acclaimed and highly influential second album, released in 1968. It consistently makes all-time top 10 rock album lists, still, after 45 years. What is it, Darren asks, what is it about this album and Van Morrison as an artist that makes so many place this album at the very pinnacle?" That, Darren, is a very interesting question, and today we've asked Joe Levy, editor-at-large for Billboard magazine, to join us to help answer that question about Van Morrison and the album Astral Weeks. Joe, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Good to be here.
You've publicly said before that you did not like Astral Weeks at first.
I've said it publicly and I've said it privately. The very first time I heard this record, I did not like it. I came to it from Moondance. I was in high school. I loved that record. I went out and got this one. I was on a mission. Me and my friends were buying every five-star record in the original Rolling Stone album guide, the one with the red cover. And I got this. I was super excited. I went to the band room, our high school band room. They had this massive stereo. I put it on, and I can't say exactly what I said because that would be impolite, but I said, "What is this?" And then there was another word. I didn't understand it. Yeah. It made no sense to me. It made absolutely no sense to me. And certain things about this record still make no sense, but musically, at least, I understand it.
Well, isn't that funny? Because, you know, I did not go out and buy Astral Weeks because I just thought of Van Morrison as the Moondance guy. And I was like, I don't want to buy a whole record of that. And what? Then Astral Weeks. So what is it about Astral Weeks? What is it that makes it so worth talking about?
Well, it's inexhaustible, for one thing. There's not another record like it. It is singular. It's a beautiful-sounding record. Go a little deeper. It's full of desperation, full of longing, full of misery. And yet these things are so tangled up that they'll take a lifetime to unravel. But what's happening here, what do we need to know about it? It's weird. Van Morrison is a 23-year-old Irish guy who's obsessed with American rhythm and blues, who comes to New York City, walks into a studio with these jazz musicians, the bass player who's on Eric Dolphy's Out to Lunch, Connie Kay from the Modern Jazz Quartet, some guy who's trained as a classical guitarist, and a flute player. And he makes this unheard before fusion of soul, jazz, blues, folk. Nobody done it.
And he's 23 years old, but he's already a veteran. So give us a little bit of, give us some Van Morrison 101 here. Where is this all coming from?
Van Morrison is out of Belfast. He's recorded with them, one of the great UK R&B blues bands.
Right.
And he's cut songs like Gloria, Mystic Eyes, Here Comes the Night. Here Comes the Night is written by a guy named Burt Burns. Burt Burns is an Atlantic Records house producer. He goes over to England. He works with Van Morrison a little bit. Supposedly, he encourages Van to find new models for his songwriting. And Van latches on to the recently released Bringing It All Back Home by Bob Dylan, becomes obsessed with it. And so Van Morrison, at 21 years old, gets a chance to come over to New York City and sign a record contract with Burt Burns and Bang Records. Van Morrison's a 21-year-old Irishman in New York City, obsessed with Bob Dylan and Ray Charles. He walks into the studio. There's the bass player who played on Highway 61 Revisited. There's this drummer who played on all the Drifters tracks that are like, it's a mind-blowing experience. And they cut Brown Eyed Girl.
So this is the song that launches his solo career after he has played with the group Them.
Hey, where did we go? Days when the rains came. Down in the hollow, playing a new game. Laughing and running, hey, hey. Skipping and jumping. Misty morning fog with our hearts that thumping, and you, my brown-eyed girl, and you, my brown-eyed girl.
Brown-eyed Girl, 1967 hit for Van Morrison, the Northern Irish singer, formerly of the band Them, now launching his solo career. And so, Joe, this really is, I mean, this sort of gets to the essence of our listener Darren's question about why Van Morrison's Astral Weeks is considered so important. If all you know of Van Morrison is Brown Eyed Girl and the later song Moondance, there's a whole other, there's like this ocean of stuff under those two islands of pop music.
Absolutely. And here's the interesting thing. We just heard Brown Eyed Girl. What an amazing song. Whether you like it or not, and there are people who don't, it's still on the radio five decades later.
Yep.
And again, here's Van Morrison, this Irish guy obsessed with Bob Dylan and Ray Charles. And he cuts this song. It goes top 10, still on the radio five decades later, which you can't actually say about Bob Dylan and Ray Charles.
Huh.
And it's an interesting accomplishment.
This is
whatever you think of this song, it's an immortal piece of music, but it's not the music that he wants to keep making. He also cuts, during these sessions, a nine-minute song about watching his lover die of tuberculosis. TB Sheets. Now, this is not a pop music subject. This is I think it's safe to say this is a subject untreated in song since then. But this is the direction he wants to go.
Joe Levy's with us here on Soundcheck. We're talking about, as part of our How to Be Smarter series, we're talking about our listener Darren's question about what it is about the Van Morrison album Astral Weeks that makes it such a consistent performer on people's top 10 lists of top records of all time. And Joe, you mentioned how he wanted to go down this more elusive road, this more phantasmagorical road in his
mystic,
songwriting.
Into the mystic.
Yeah. So is that what takes us to Astral Weeks?
There are two things that take us to Astral Weeks. One is that impulse, and the other is the absolute abject misery that Van Morrison plunges into after Brown Eyed Girl. He begins to get into a conflict with Burt Burns, who he records for, who runs Bang Records. Burt wants more pop-oriented material. Morrison doesn't want to do it. And Burt Burns drops dead of a heart attack at 38 years old. Mm-hmm. And Van Morrison then discovers, as so many young people did in the music business, and still continue to discover, that he has signed one of the worst contracts anyone can imagine. He's basically an indentured servant. He can't record for anybody else. He can't pursue this new musical direction. He can't get work in New York clubs gigging live because people are afraid of running into legal troubles with Bang Records. And Burt Burns' widow gets so angry with him that she actually contacts immigration to have him deported. Van Morrison does a couple of things. He marries his 19-year-old girlfriend. He goes into the studio and cuts more than an album's worth of, sort of fake songs mm-hmm. in order to get out of his contract.
To fulfill his contract obligation.
And then he moves up to Cambridge. And he and his young wife are living in Cambridge.
This is Cambridge, Massachusetts.
That's right.
Yeah.
He doesn't move back to England. He moves to Cambridge, Massachusetts. And he begins, for the first time, to pursue a completely other direction. He's been playing rhythm and blues. He's been playing in electric bands. He begins gigging with an acoustic bassist, a flute player, and he starts roughing out the direction that he'll follow on Astral Weeks. And it's important to note that two of the songs on Astral Weeks are actually cut for Bang Records. They're cut as these sort of up-tempo, more bluesy, almost party numbers. Madam George, one of the most famous songs on Astral Weeks, Lester Bang said it was the whirlpool of the record, is actually cut as a party song. You can hear people laughing and yelling in the background. It's got gospel backup vocals, really great lead guitar. It's full electric. It's nothing like what we find on Astral Weeks. In Cambridge, he attracts the attention of Warner Brothers Records. They sign him. He comes down to New York and he begins to work at 23 years old on Astral Weeks.
Including a version of this song, Madam George, that is somewhat different from the thing he tossed off for Bang Records.
Down Cypress Avenue, with a childlike vision sleeping into view. The click and clacking of a high-heeled shoe. Ford and Fitzroy, Madam George. Marching with the soldier boy behind. He's much older now with head on drinking wine. And that smell of sweet perfume comes drifting through. Earl, a cool night, Earl, like Shalimar.
That is just a little bit of the album Astral Weeks, a 1968 release by Van Morrison, and the song Madam George. Our listener Darren, commenting at soundcheck.org, asked, what is it about Astral Weeks that it consistently makes all these all-time top 10 rock album lists? And Joe Levy of Billboard magazine is here to answer Darren's question in our series, How to Be Smarter About... So I imagine the young Joe Levy in the band room with the big speakers listening to this and going, WTF, or whatever the equivalent was back then.
Yeah, we didn't abbreviate. it sounded strange. A lot of this record sounds strange. A lot of this record is strange. The bass player, Richard Davis, sounds absolutely beautiful there. He's jazz trained.
Mm-hmm.
He's played on Eric Dolphy's albums, but the more important thing is he spent 3 years touring in Sarah Vaughan's band.
Mm.
He understands how to follow a singer where that singer wants to go. Connie Kay, the drummer with the Modern Jazz Quartet, understands the same thing. These guys provide very sympathetic backing as Van Morrison is working out what these songs are going to be as they're taking shape. And there are a lot of stories about these sessions with no definitive version of it. John Cale is quoted in a Lester Bangs essay saying, they couldn't get what they wanted out of Morrison. They stuffed him in one room and the musicians in the other. They had nothing to do with each other. Richard Davis has said he seemed very shy and standoffish. Whatever the case was, they provide this enormously sympathetic setting. They follow him wherever he wants to go as this music is taking shape around him. There are different kinds of records. Moondance, which in fact is a Van Morrison record I love even more than this one, is a perfect pop album that's just as mystical and strange as this one. But that's a record where Van Morrison and the people who work with him are making concise songs. They know exactly what they want those songs to do. This is a record where the music is taking shape around the people making it.
And you're sort of, I mean, the recording process here, as I understand it, was there were no, like, you know, lead sheets passed out or anything.
Well, I mean, these are jazz players, so they're used to following the song where it's going to go, but they're also used to working with a lead sheet. He would come in, he would play some sort of rough of these songs. And again, he had recorded Madame George, he had recorded before. There's a finished version of it sitting somewhere. He's not improvising these songs. He's worked over at least these lyrical ideas, if not the musical ideas already. But, and Morrison will do this, he will improv songs later. He will record Listen to the Lion on St. Dominic's Preview, the closest he comes to Astral Weeks. Connie Kay is on drums again. On guitar is Ronnie Montrose, weirdly enough. But this guy could get incredible stuff out of guys who came in as session players, right?
So we're talking about this album, Astral Weeks. Let's talk a little bit about the title track. I mean, even the word, the phrase Astral Weeks sort of talks to the kind of mystic, almost hypnotic stream of consciousness feeling to a lot of the songs here.
That's right. I mean, there are different ways of listening to this record. One is a purely musical way. You know, you can try to argue about what Madame George is actually about. And let's talk about that in a second. But listening to this record purely musically with Morrison's voice as a sound, letting that stream of consciousness come over, Morrison becomes on this record someone who works the way that a James Joyce or Gertrude Stein would, using language as a sound effect almost. He's a cross between the James Joyce of Ulysses and the James Joyce of Finnegan's Wake. You know, Joyce famously finished Ulysses in Paris working from Dublin, a map of Dublin, right? And this is a record that's very much about Belfast, very much. Cypress Avenue is a real place. There's a song called Cypress Avenue. Madame George begins back on Cypress Avenue. But it's made by a guy who's dislocated. He's adrift in New York City. He's adrift in his life. He's been desperate. He's been lost. He's been lonely. He's made a new marriage. And he's working through these memories of Ireland. And he's working through these memories of an Ireland that literally doesn't exist anymore. That is, it's in the past for him, but also he's not there. He's working through these memories of Ireland in his childhood. He's born in 45. All of that stuff, all of the water that gets him stoned, all of these like beautiful, like this is all changing. This has all been changing over the years. And he's working through all of this on this record. It's incredibly potent. So this introductory moment, Astral Weeks, the setting of the tone, this is really a slipping into a dream state of mind, and it's very clear here at the start.
Astral Weeks, title track of the 1968 record by Van Morrison.
If I ventured in the slipstream between the viaducts of your dream, where mobile steel rims crack and the ditch and the back road stop, could you find me? Or would you kiss my eyes, laying it down, silence easy to be born again, to be born again? From the far side of the ocean, if I put the wheels in motion, then I stand with my arms behind me, and pushing out the door. Could you find me? Would you kiss on my eyes? Lay me down. Is silence easy to be born again?
Astral Weeks, title track of the great record by Van Morrison. So, yeah, you can call it folk rock, and people have referred to Van Morrison as, you know, one of the original blue-eyed soul singers. There's a lot of chamber music on this record, too. The strings and the flute. I mean, the playing is just... The arrangements are extraordinary.
The arrangements are extraordinary, and it's an interesting thing that we know the strings were dubbed in later. That's the one thing everyone agrees on.
Mm-hmm.
So how spare it must have sounded originally is fascinating to think about. Just the bass, the guitar, the drums. Yes, there might have been flute in there. But it's interesting, if you listen to this record, at how prevalent those strings are, how prevalent those horns are. It's both a free-form record and a constructed record.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so fascinating about it in some sense. Like, people were learning how to do this while they were doing it. You want to make this kind of record now, you know, maybe you smoke something or drink something. I'm not recommending, kids. I'm just saying it's one path. And you listen to this record and you try to do this. But this map hasn't been drawn at this time.
Right.
So for both... From the production side and from the side, the musicians in the studio, they're figuring this out in the moment.
So how does something that really is taking shape right there in the studio as the musicians are playing, how does it come to have this enduring influence and to be, as our listener Darren questioned, to be something that constantly appears on top 10 lists?
Well, for one thing, it is inexhaustible. For another, it's been well celebrated, most powerfully, or perhaps originally most powerfully, by Lester Bangs in a Grill Marcus collection, Stranded, the premise of which is, what album would you take with you to a desert island? Bangs wrote about the dark side of this record, the misery, the grotesquerie, but different people hear different things in it. And that's one of the things that keeps people coming back to it. I said before, there are different ways of hearing this record. There's a purely musical way of hearing it. There is, and I've encountered these people. Shout out to my man, Ben Quinones, who in college made a 90-minute tape, both sides, 45 minutes of Nothing But Sweet Thing over and over again. That's his version of Astral Weeks. God bless him. You can hear that one glorious love song. You can hear it just as a musical. You can a construct, just Van Morrison's voice as a horn here. Or you can keep coming back to it, as I do, hearing different things all the time, different levels of meaning all the time, different ways of refracting childhood nostalgia,
yeah.
Adult despair. Love fulfillment, longing for love, all of these things are woven through this record, and different ones of them are going to pop out to you at different moments depending on where you are, why you're hearing it.
It is a very elusive record in many ways, which could be one of the things that keeps people coming back to it. I'm not going to suggest, Joe, that we end with 90 minutes of Sweet Thing, but we might end with a little bit of it.
Let's do it.
All right. Joe Levy is editor-at-large at Billboard magazine, here to answer Darren from Paramus' question, what is it about Van Morrison's Astral Weeks that makes so many people place it at the pinnacle of music of the late 20th century? And Joe, thanks very much for giving us this guided tour.
Pleasure.
And I was strong and merry wind, jumped the hedges first. And I will drink the clear, clean water for to quench my thirst. And I'll show out the ferry boats and they'll get high on a blue ocean against tomorrow's sky. And I will never grow so old. And I will walk and talk and
gardens all wet with rain. Oh, oh. Sweet thing, this sweet thing. Yeah.
That's a little bit of the song Sweet Thing from the 1968 album Astral Weeks from Van Morrison. Stick around because we're not quite done with Astral Weeks yet. Plus, later in the show, hear a live set from the New Orleans-based southern rock band The Revivalists. P.S. They're all Van Morrison fans. That's coming up later on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. So we just got a little bit smarter about Van Morrison's album Astral Weeks, part of our week-long quest to help people fill in their musical blind spots. It was Darren in New Jersey who told us he wanted to be smarter about Van Morrison and that record in particular. Now, Darren, if you're going to try and fake your way through a conversation about Astral Weeks, here's some interesting info for you. In 2008, 40 years after Van Morrison released Astral Weeks, he recorded a live concert performance of the whole album at the Hollywood Bowl. That recording was released as a live album, and I'd like to play a track for you. It's called Ballerina, and it appears on the original Astral Weeks record, but this is the 2008 live concert version.
Moving on up.
That's the song Ballerina, recorded live by Van Morrison during a 2008 concert performance of his 1968 album Astral Weeks, the subject of tonight's edition of How to Be Smarter About. So what do you want to be smarter about? Go to soundcheck.org and leave a comment, or email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org. We recently chatted with music writer Rob Sheffield about his book, Turn Around Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. The result? Well, the Soundcheck voicemail box was turned into a kind of karaoke confessional. Here's just one of the messages we received.
Hi, this is Debbie from Pearl River, and you can file this under Karaoke Songs I Will Never Sing Again. I was singing Me and Bobby McGee, the Janis Joplin version, and I was doing really good. It has a great story. It's gritty. It's one of the great female songs. But then you get to the chorus, and there's about 5 minutes of la 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 la. And that gets old after about 15 seconds, and it just goes on and on. So a word to the wise for new karaokeers, do not sing Me and Bobby McGee by Janis Joplin.
Thanks for the call, Debbie. You can always leave a message for me and the Soundcheck team at 866-939-1612. Coming up, rock and soul from New Orleans when the Revivalists join us to play live. This is Soundcheck.
Hi, my name's Craig. I'm from Fairfield, Connecticut. The first album I bought with my own money was the CD for Pretty in Pink.
If you leave, don't leave now. Please don't take my heart away. Promise me just one more night. Then we'll go our separate ways.
I'm Craig from Connecticut, and you're listening to Soundcheck from WNYC.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. New Orleans is known for lots of different types of music. Jazz, Zydeco, brass bands, hip-hop. And now, thanks to this band, the Revivalists, a kind of southern-inflected indie rock, too. The seven-piece band has a full-length CD called City of Sound, but they've built their reputation on their live sets. So let's hear them, live on Soundcheck. This first song is called Navigate Below. The band is The Revivalists.
The sun itself is colorblind. Do the light. It's burning out somehow. I watch it pass as a rider. Gaze away from the sea. Digital map live driver. Thank you.
That is The Revivalists, live in the Soundcheck studio in a song called Navigate Below. David Shaw is the band's vocalist, Zach Feinberg plays the guitar, Ed Williams plays the pedal steel guitar, Andrew Campanelli is behind our drum kit, George Gikas playing the bass, Rob Ingram playing sax, and Michael Giraudeau playing the trumpet and the keyboards. David, to you and the rest of the band, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having us.
So we were talking earlier about Van Morrison, and it turns out this is a band full of Van Morrison fans.
Absolutely.
So is he on? I mean, what's playing in the tour bus? If you guys, someone's in a Van Morrison mood, what? What kinds of things being thrown out from the peanut
so
gallery there?
Into the mystic.
So, I mean, you know, his blend of kind of R&B and folk and jazz, that must ring true for you guys, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great songs, great voice, great band.
And your band name, The Revivalists, doesn't strike me as a kind of random thing. That seems to be a carefully considered name. What are you guys reviving?
You know, it wasn't necessarily a carefully considered thing. I don't know. It was kind of we needed a name for a gig back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think it's a striking name. You know, it conjures up a lot of thought, you know, what could that be, you know?
Right. Well, it conjures up kind of classic rock and roll, R&B,
absolutely.
Funk.
Absolutely.
And all those things are...
Yeah, and, you know, that it's kind of like almost, you know, slightly like a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know? It's kind of,
right.
It's happening, you know? We do a lot of that. You know, we mix the new with the old.
Mm-hmm. Well, now let me ask you, the creation myth behind this band, as I've heard it, is that Zach was bicycling down a street in New Orleans one day and heard you singing on your front porch.
Yes.
That's true?
That is true. That is 100% correct.
So you're minding your own business out on the porch singing, singing what?
I was singing a song that's actually on our Vital Signs album, Purple Heart.
So one of your own?
One of my own songs, yeah.
And this guy comes up to you, this guy is pedaling by, stops his bike, comes up to you and says what?
Says, he was just listening, actually, and I stopped playing the song, and he was like, no, finish the song, you know?
Uh-huh.
Sounds good, you know? So I finished the song, and then, you know, we kind of struck up a little conversation there, you know?
And so at what point did the conversation turn to... Well, we've got a singer and a guitarist. We should form a band.
Yeah, he picked up my acoustic, and he was just like, yeah, I play, you know. And he played some, he played Candyman, I think, like an alternating pick pattern. That's the song.
Nice.
And I was kind of like, wow, you know, this guy can really play.
So you got a guitarist, you got a singer, now you need a bass player and a drummer, and you didn't stop there. Pedal steel, trumpets. At what point did you think, I think we have enough instruments now?
We don't.
We don't is the answer.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's just been one of those things. It's like over the years, you know, we've expanded the sound, you know, on the records and live.
Right.
And it's like, this is kind of, you can kind of get everything from, you know, the core that we have currently, you know,
So you've got enough horns.
We've got enough, you know,
it's
like you got the horn section, you got the organ, you got the guitar, you got the pedal steel, you know, you can pretty much create whatever you want out of that.
All right. So the band is The Revivalists, and now they're here in our Soundcheck studio. You want to do this song Soul Fight for us?
Sure.
All right. David Shaw, claiming his place at the singing mic, and the rest of the band, The Revivalists, here in the studio with us today. Here's the song called Soul Fight. It's The Revivalists, once again, live on Soundcheck.
Take a really good look at me. I'm
22 and I still don't see why all of you people can't get along anymore. Falling down ain't so hard to do. It only crunch me a bottle of brew. So I'm gonna find something else to do. Uh-huh. As if I ever was to say to you all the things that you wanted me to love, I'd have to find something else to do. Uh-huh.
The Revivalists. Wow, a little bit of everything in that song called Soul Fight, played live here in the Soundcheck studio with David Shaw singing and playing the acoustic guitar, Zach Feinberg the electric guitar, Ed Williams the pedal steel guitar, Michael Girardot at our piano playing the keyboard, a little bit of backing vocals there, Rob Ingram on sax, George Gikas on bass, and behind the drum kit, Andrew Campanelli. And Soul Fight is on the album City of Sound by the Revivalists. Once again, live performance here in the Soundcheck studio, band out of New Orleans. And David, you know, we think of New Orleans and, you know, Tremé showed us a lot of the musical life of New Orleans. You guys were Tremé, right, the last season?
Yep. We were just starting out, kind of. I think we were 2 years in. It was like 2009. Wow. Yeah. And we got the call. It was, we had a friend who was in there, and, you know, we were like, you know, kind of like, hey, you know, maybe put us in there, maybe, you know, write us in, you know, and it actually happened, so.
Yeah. So, because of shows like Tremé, many people who are not from New Orleans think they know New Orleans. What's the real New Orleans? What's something about New Orleans that we don't know about, that tourists don't necessarily see?
You know, I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, it's dirty, it's gritty, it's lovely, it's beautiful. You know, a lot of people go to Bourbon Street, you know, that's the obvious tourist trap kind of, I mean, Bourbon Street's cool, it's fun. You know, I think Frenchman Street is starting to get, you know, a little more out there, you know, to people who don't really know about it, but that's where you're going to find, you know, a lot of the real, you know, music in New Orleans for sure.
Is there there's bounce music, there's a thriving hip-hop scene, we know about the Preservation Hall and the jazz orchestra and stuff. Is there a rock scene, is there an indie rock scene in New Orleans?
It's definitely coming up, yeah, absolutely. And you got a lot of bands, you got the Cardinal Sons, some good friends of ours.
Mm-hmm. Is there a Williamsburg neighborhood in New Orleans?
Yeah,
for
Red.
Yeah. What is it? The Bywater is probably.
The Bywater.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, David, it's been great fun having you and the rest of the Revivalists here playing for us in the studio today. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having us. Great time.
You want to wrap it up with Criminal?
Let's do it.
All right. Once again, the Revivalists. They are playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. The song is called Criminal. We'll be right back.
table. Speak with the right kind of mind. It's all just a dream. Clean what you clean and be dirty. Well, I get a feeling at the low, I'm chasing the eyes down, and they hide in the same sound. There will come a day when the night will be ours, you know, because I'm a criminal and I do this every day. I take the low road, I'm on them highways. Maybe we'll meet again, maybe we'll die today, maybe we'll live forever, never throw this up away. I'm a criminal and I do this every day. I throw this up away, I do this every day.
This song's called Criminal from the Revivalists, live here in the Soundcheck studio. Hear the whole session on our website, soundcheck.org, or download the free podcast. Monday on the show, we'll get a Pick 3 playlist from Matthew Weiner. He's the guy who created Mad Men and was a longtime writer and executive producer on The Sopranos. Now he's got a new movie called Are You Here, starring Owen Wilson and Zach Galifianakis and Amy Poehler. Plus, we'll have live music from the chamber pop group known as Gem Club. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, and Mike Katziff with Amy Pearl. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer, and our interns are Haley Shaw, Micah Lowinger, and Ian Petrarca. Now, we had a big band in here today, and Ian, as always, was a huge help with that, and we're saying goodbye to Ian today. He's heading back to school. Ian, best of luck, and thanks for all the hard work. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.